Welcome to the Awakening to Abundance podcast. I'm your host, Athena. This podcast is more than a podcast. It's a transformative journey designed to help you awaken to your abundance, for you to discover what living the fullness of life means to you, and to co-create that life in this podcast community. As always, we're jumping right in with today's episode. After recording this full podcast in two parts, actually, because I had to go to the bathroom at one point, it comes to about an hour and 40 minutes. So I decided to make this into two episodes, both around 50 minutes long, and then part two will air later this week. Enjoy. Welcome to another episode of the Awakening to Abundance podcast. I want to catch you up on exactly where we are in the past, essentially catch you up to August 2023, because we're going to start going into some other very vulnerable voice notes. And there has been a whole history that is not shared because of privacy and sensitivity, right? But I do want to give you an idea of what's led up to this, what's built up to this, and also some reflections of the journey. And I am talking about the big break me open thing that happened to me, which is divorce, and it is the single most big, painful, full of human emotion experience that I continue to use in some ways to continue to awaken. So before I dive in, I really want to invite you to clear your schedule, give yourself the time that it'll take to get through this podcast episode, and also check in with yourself about what it is that you need to hear today. Because as much as I will tell my story, my hope is that something will resonate with you that you need to hear, or that your inner being, your inner wisdom is asking for you to hear. And it's really interesting how surreal it is to go back all the way to the beginning in 2017. And for some people, it might not seem like that's a very long relationship, but it is. It is a long relationship. And it doesn't actually matter the length of time anyway. What matters is the energy, the experience of it. But it was so surreal to write out all of what I'm going to tell you. And man, hindsight really is 2020. And when you're in it, you really don't see the things that are unfolding. And at least for me, I wasn't in a place where I was present enough at the time to see some of the little red flags that now I would be able to say, we should talk about that. Or, maybe we should get a third party to help us out with that. And the only reason I have this much clarity now, too, is because I've done a lot of work on going back and processing. And again, you'll hear that in the voice notes to come. And I hired somebody, a professional, to really help me through that time. And also, I knew when I was going through it that this was an opportunity. Life was giving me an opportunity, even though it was really painful, for me to learn. And so I didn't rush the process along.
And I really felt into everything that needed to be felt and learned. And so there's been a lot of growth and expansion that's come through that. And I think that when we have these very human experiences that break us open like this, it is an opportunity to grow and expand. And there are many things that build up and break down a marriage. And it takes both people to build and break down a marriage. So I want to be very clear that I am aware of that, and I take a lot of responsibility and, again, introspection and reflection into that. And I'll say one more thing before I start to dive into it. Being a military spouse, being a military family is really different with the amount of change that the family endures. There are definitely moments, looking back now, where I thought, I actually am aware of that red flag right there, but because there's so much change going on, it's almost, it has to be a high priority for us to get into some sort of therapy or to do anything about it, because the partner is either going to be going on another training away from home and may not have access to therapy, or we're moving. And these are excuses, right? Because if it's really a priority, we make it work. But at the same time, because there's so much change, there's also a hope, a thought, at least the way that I was, if, when we move to another place, things will be a little bit different. They will be different. Perhaps something will change. And of course, that's hoping that because my outer circumstances are changing, that the inner problems between the two of us are going to change. But I just really want to give a shout out to all of the military spouses, all of the military families that go through this, because I think it takes extra, extra presence to do this, to have a conscious relationship with your partner when you are in the military. So I just want to put that out there and say, y'all are amazing. And then two major life lessons that I want to share out of this are to really take the time when you're in it, in life, in relationship, to be present and to be appreciative. Because we do know that everything changes, everything. But when we're present and when we're appreciative and when we're thoroughly enjoying life, and I don't just mean the good times, there's a fullness of life. There's an abundance that comes from living in that way. And when you're not, as I was not to the extent I am now, that was one of the biggest things that impacted me afterward and actually made it feel so much more full of grief, because I took for granted the many, many, many beautiful moments that we shared. And by not being as present and appreciative, I think oftentimes my ego flared up in moments where if I had gotten more present or had been more present, it would not have felt like such a big deal on the grand scheme of things. So that's my first lesson, to really love and hold, not grip tightly, but to just appreciate all that is in this moment. And then my second major life lesson personally was this understanding of relationships that in order to fully be present for another person, in order to fully be able to hear the other person, especially in arguments or fights, disagreements, one must learn to hold oneself fully in order to create space to hear and be present with somebody else. Because in arguments, disagreements, oftentimes it can feel like you are in the emotion, your ego is triggered. And oftentimes the other person is too. But if you can hold yourself, if you can have such a strong relationship with yourself, if you can love yourself to the point where you know that when you enter into these disagreements or arguments, that you are safe and you are secure and that you are loved no matter what, it is a hell of a lot easier to hold that space for somebody else as well. Because you've got you so well that you can self-soothe yourself and then also hold space to hear what that other person is saying and to empathize with what they're saying. And for me, because I did not know that, especially in the beginning of our more difficult times, it was very difficult for me to move past the initial response that I was having enough to hold space for him. And I'll go more into this as we go through this. But I just want you to marinate on that a little bit and see where you are in that process and what your argument style might be. Okay. So, again, I have this all written out so that way I can try to keep all the dates and all the things in my mind as I'm telling you all this. Previous to, and let me clarify before I go into this. For privacy, I am using a different name. I'm using the name Peter. And sometimes I'll call him in the podcast in general, not only Peter, but past partner, previous partner. But we were married, to be clear. So before getting into a relationship with Peter, I was in a 5-year relationship with a man who was lovely and has 2 beautiful children. And we really tried to make it work. However, because I didn't actually want children, we were not able to make it fully work. And I was younger, and I was really trying to see if I could do this. And so after 5 years, that ended around April 2017. And because we had worked very hard on it, when I went back into the dating scene, there was a real sense of freedom, a real sense of being back on my own again. 5 years is a good amount of time. We lived together. And it felt really like I had made it through that and had my life together from a very outside perspective, conditioned standpoint, meaning I had a good job, I had my own apartment, I had all the things, I'm checking off the boxes, right? And one of the things that was different than dating previously was that I went into this not just with the lovely sense of freedom. And when I say freedom, I don't mean going out and having relations with a bunch of people. I mean authenticity and alignment, because I had tried so hard to fit into a box that was not what I was called to. So honestly, between the freedom and having it all together, and the third thing that was really empowering was I went into the dating world with this feeling of I'm just getting to know people. And by trade, I am trained in sociology and cultural anthropology, and I'm a very curious person. So in general, this all aligns. I just wanted to have new friends. I wanted to get to know what people were doing now, how people were dating even, and all that kind of thing. And so there was this really lovely allowing that came along with that. But I was also still in my conditioning, still in the conditioning of you grow up, you go to school, you go to college, you get a job, you find a partner, you start a family. And while I knew now that I didn't want to start a family, I was still trying to check off the boxes. So Peter and I met online using Coffee Meets Bagel. And at the time, it was a Shark Tank thing. And so we were excited that we were using this particular platform. So we bonded over the fact that we only were using this particular platform because of the Shark Tank. So right off the bat, you can tell what kind of relationship and people we are. But also, I, at the time, was a program coordinator for NC State University that had a program that was essentially teaching languages in Fort Bragg, where he was stationed. And while he wasn't taking our programs, he was taking similar programs. So we knew similar people, instructors, etc. And so we bonded over that. And my brother and I went on a trip to do a cruise through Alaska and then stay an extra week in Seattle, because I had visited California prior to that, but I'd never been to Seattle, and I really wanted to go to Alaska and that part of the country. And so while I was over there, doing that trip with my brother, that is actually when Peter and I matched on Coffee Meets Bagel. And I was like, this is perfect, because we matched while I was actually on the cruise. And then we were going to spend a week in Seattle after that. And I hadn't planned anything for that. So the first line in Peter's bio, or whatever they call it, was, I love the Pacific Northwest. Huh, perfect. So I reached out and I was like, could you tell me about anything that I could do there. And we started going back and forth, and he ended up writing me this long email full of things to do, because it's a beautiful state. There's so much to do. And I told him I was so appreciative that I'd like to take him out for a drink when I got back to North Carolina after the trip was over, where he was stationed. And so we did. We went back and we had a lovely, we didn't actually have drinks. We had dinner. We straight up went to dinner. We had a few phone calls before actually meeting up. And we had our first date in October of 2017. And then from there, I'll just pause there. For me, when we were telling the story when we were married, he would just say, "We met on Coffee Meets Bagel." And I was like, "Oh, no, 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 no. Like, there's so much more to this story. It's so cute that the reason why we bonded was because I was in this place and you had that very specific first sentence. That's what attracted me, honestly, in the beginning to your profile." So it's a kind of a little meet cute story. But anyway, we ended up hanging out and doing things in North Carolina and getting to know each other. And it was a lot of fun. We were enjoying each other's company. And then for New Year's Eve, we decided that because he was going to go home to Washington State and have the holidays with his family, and I was going to go home to Virginia and have holidays with my family. So we decided that we would meet in New Orleans, I want to say on like December 27th or something like that, and then ring in the new year there. And so we did. And it was a lot of fun. And we actually ended up saying to each other, "I love you," on New Year's Eve. And we did it on the steamboat Natchez. I think we were at some sort of jazz brunch. And I'll fast forward a little bit. We ended up getting married on the steamboat Natchez. So very sweet. All of it is a very sweet story. And it's almost exactly in that consciousness what I wanted, what I imagined for my life, what I, from the conditioning, Disney princesses are coming up in my mind, what I had always hoped for. And then in 2018, we went everywhere. We went to Key West, Florida. We went to Savannah for St. Patrick's Day. We went to Hilton Head. We went to a bunch of North Carolina beaches. We went to North Carolina mountains. We went to nearby national parks. We were doing a lot of travel. We were having a lot of fun with each other. And at the time, he was really in his element. He was finishing up training and he was really good at the training that he was doing. And I think that that really helped the relationship in general, because there was a lot less stress. And military spouses and families will understand this better than most. Because there is so much to a military career at any one given time, there are definitely moments where it's more stressful than others. And of course, depending on your skills and talents, some moments are easier for others than for others. So we were really in the full honeymoon stage, and I did really feel a sense of harmony. We wanted the same things at that time. We enjoyed similar things. We enjoyed each other's company. We were able to be with one another for long periods of time. We were able to be completely ourselves. And I kind of an asterisk that a little bit, and I'll come back to that. But for the most part, it felt in the beginning, especially, that we could be quiet around one another. We could just be. And so we started talking about marriage. And we were having experiences that were expanding me. And on one hand, while the Disney princesses thing came up for me, the other part of it was he was so aligned in the amount that he wanted to travel and explore and adventure with me. And I had done a lot of my own personal travel exploration and adventure prior to meeting him, that doing it together was beautiful. I hadn't met somebody I had could do that with. And my mind is going toward another thing that we'll discuss later. But essentially, domestic travel was really easy for us. And then going abroad is a different story, which is understandable. But honestly, we were at a different point in our lives then too. If we were traveling in the overseas in the honeymoon stage, I think that it probably would have been fine. Life is a lot about timing and experience as well. But anyway, I felt like I was living in a dream. In fact, at one point, I think I even said to him, our lives feel like a constant vacation. It feels like other people's dream life. Like, we were going so many places, we were doing so many things, and we were enjoying it so much that, and I hadn't done it to that extent before, that for me, it felt like almost this endless, beautiful adventure exploration. And at the same time, there was this visit from his stepmom and dad at one point. And I remember asking her about having him continue to be open and communicative. And I remember she saying something like, if the amount of communication that you're getting now isn't what you want, then it may not be a good fit. And at the time, while I knew that I couldn't change him, two specific things, looking back at it, other than the fact that it felt really great because we were in the honeymoon stage, but two things made me kind of overlook it. And when I say overlook it, I guess I mean overlook it to a point where I wasn't going to leave the relationship, but have a keen awareness that this might be something we needed to work on in the future, or something that we needed to continue to work on continuously throughout the relationship, right? So the two things that kind of kept me holding there, though, and not really further thinking about it, was I'd seen him be very communicative and open and loving in the beginning of our relationship, in the very, you know, in the honeymoon stage. And even though there was seemingly a shift, I believed, because I saw it in the beginning, that we could always get back there. Even though he was very honest about, when we did start to talk about this, it was difficult for him to do in the beginning, in the honeymoon stage. That although, yes, it was harmonious for him as well, he was making an effort to be open to that extent. And the second thing is that I picked up along my childhood, the conditioning, the ideas, the thoughts, the beliefs that I was there to support my husband that was my job. And this type of view of supporting spouse is very prominent in the military, and so is probably one of the reasons why I fit into that life so well. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, it wasn't fully in alignment, and I didn't realize that at the time. So we're in this beautiful honeymoon stage. We're doing a bunch of things. It's really great. And then in November of 2018, early November of 2018, I believe, he went on his first deployment. And it was literally his first deployment ever. And even leading up to that, there was a moment where his family was visiting again. And being a military girlfriend at the time, or significant other, I didn't realize, because it hasn't been that long yet, I didn't realize how much the military would go back and forth about things. And so we had to find a real balance between him hearing that it's going to be 6 months and it's going to be 9 months and it's going to be a year. Oh no, now it's back to 6 months and then it's 9 months and now it's a year. We had to find that balance. And I remember we were at dinner and we were with his parents and he told me that it could be 9 months or 12 months now. And I cried and I went to the bathroom and I cried some more. And I couldn't hold enough space at that time for myself and him, because it was his first deployment too. And while maybe he was more knowledgeable about the back and forth with the military in general, anything being the first time for anyone is the unknown, and the unknown is scary. But I definitely was 100% only feeling my feelings. And the other thing that I got upset with him about was that he told me this in front of his family. And so that was one of those moments looking back now that, like, and also was very pivotal to him because he told me that it was, that I wish that I had had the presence and capacity to hold the space, not only for myself, but for him as well. And there will be phrases from me in present day 2025 Athena where I may say I wish blank, but honestly, I don't, because all of it led to here, right? So just keep that in mind. And also keep that in mind for yourself. We wouldn't be where we are ever if the things that happened to us didn't happen. So we made the best of it, and I ended up traveling and visiting him while he was there. I visited in late December, so we rung in the new year there, and that was a lot of fun. We also met with a friend of mine that I had met when I was applying to work for the State Department. And so we all had lunch, and that lunch really was the beginning of Peter and I discussing the idea of him becoming something different in the military and essentially working abroad, being abroad more, being more in that world. And that kind of really was one of the pivotal points in the relationship, because not only were we both interested in working and living overseas, but it was a way that we wouldn't have to go through deployments, because in that particular career path for him, I could always go with him most of the time. I could usually go with him to wherever he was going to. So we also, during that trip, started talking about marriage and dates and venues. And we started discussing that new path and how that would all work with the way that we would get married. And the other thing about being in the military and being a military family and girlfriend, etc., is there are, depending on where you are in your career and what branch and all the other things, at any one given time, there are a lot of different options that are available for the soldier. And so one of the things you do, especially if you want to try to control or manipulate your career, is to decide amongst the many options and plan. And that worked really well for me because I was a planner to the T and I loved planning. And so of course, even now as just a military girlfriend, I am starting to plan out like all these intricacies, right? And we are two together. We're doing that together. And he came home and it was only a 6-month deployment. He came home and when he got back, I moved in. And it was interesting too, because when he first got back, we did have some difficulty in reintegrating, which, looking back, is also one of those things that I can see now why, but in the moment, definitely would not have been aware. Reintegration is difficult in general for some people. And because this was his first deployment, this was my first deployment, and now he came home and I immediately moved in, there was change upon change upon change. And so we were having difficulty navigating all of that. And we ended up actually going to see a counselor at that time. And not just to figure out reintegration, but because we wanted to be healthy and strong moving into the next chapters of our lives. And I will say that the military does a really great job of supporting that union and wanting and providing opportunities for the two to grow together, the family to grow together in general. They do a really good job of that. And that is something in the community that is encouraged and I would say taken advantage of, maybe not to the extent that we could take advantage of it, but it is highly looked upon. So that is one of the reasons why I think it felt easier for him to seek help at that time, as opposed to seeking help individually and having that be reflected on his own mental health, which unfortunately and fortunately, the military is making strides in that area, but I think there's still work to do. And I think even with the work being done, there's still going to be a lag in the belief that there is nothing wrong with going and seeking help as a soldier. And I'll admit that at times we did have loud fights, but we were both working on it. And the time that we spent in therapy at the time did help shed light on how we each argued and how to do it better. And we did work on that. We did take time to actually work on that and see if we could be better partners in that way. Communication issues did come up and we were working on them But we were not working on them in a broad sense. We were working on them more in the sense that we, when we were arguing, what is the best way to argue? The other thing is, and this is the part where I've talked about how beautiful the relationship was, I'm going to get vulnerable. Because by this time, we had been together for, I want to say, like a year and some change. And we were living together and we were planning to get married, et cetera. So things are going to come up also, like when you spend that much time with people and you move in and that kind of thing. We both realized that we were people pleasers, that we had codependency tendencies. And while it sounds sweet to, and we can do a whole podcast episode on codependency, and I'm sure we will at one point. While it sounds sweet to want to please the other person, and we're so concerned about the other person's happiness and being happy, it actually causes the opposite effect, where one person is trying to make the other person happy in spite of themselves, and the other person is doing the exact same thing in spite of themselves. So actually, both people are not fully happy, right? So the other thing that we would come to learn further down the road is the importance of attachment styles. And we, again, we didn't get to this until we were having major issues. But in the beginning, I was more anxiously attached. And again, we will have a podcast episode on attachment styles at some point as well, so you can dig more into this if you don't know what I'm talking about. And if you don't know what I'm talking about and you're interested, I highly recommend the book Attached. It's a very good book. And his attachment style is avoidant, which, thinking about the integration and him being alone for a long period of time and then me moving in after the deployment, all of that, I think, was the first time that his attachment style got triggered. And when avoidance and anxious attachment styles are not the best pair, you have to be very, very conscious, very cognizant if that is the match that you are, or be working one or the other person, working on moving yourself into a secure, attached place. And again, at that point, I had no idea what any of that meant or that they were even a thing. And even the counselor that we were seeing initially, she didn't bring that up. But now looking back at it, I can see why we were responding in certain ways that we were responding. And then the other thing is that when I used to drink alcohol, I have been sober for almost 7 months. When I used to drink alcohol, the impacts for me were definitely depressant. And so you can imagine a people pleaser who is not necessarily saying exactly what she thinks, feels, even to herself sometimes, that when she drinks and her inhibitions are lowered, I'll take some real personal responsibility here. When I drank and my inhibitions were lowered, my ego came out fiercely sometimes and said things in certainly not nice ways, not conscious ways. And sometimes unkind and angry and I was going to say powerful, but they were not empowered. So I had my own issues that I was dealing with as well. And the way that I was dealing with them was exacerbated by the fact that I was drinking. I wasn't an alcoholic, and I didn't have outbursts all the time or anything. But it was enough that at one point during the marriage, he brought it up as an issue. And being very honest with myself, absolutely now being sober, I can definitely see, again, hindsight being 2020, how that definitely didn't help any of our issues that we were having, right? And it wasn't aligned, and it wasn't authentic, and it wasn't kind. And it was a defense mechanism. And I own that. So, moving right along. We had the date of our marriage. We had the place. And we had told everybody about how we were going to get married. And we started inviting people. Our wedding was very, very small, actually. It was in New Orleans on the Steamboat Natchez, as I mentioned, and it was on a palindrome date. So it was on February 2nd, so 0202, 2020. So right before the pandemic. And it was, again, it was very small. It was immediate family and then a few friends on my end from my side. I didn't do all the big things. Like, I didn't have a bridal shower or a bachelorette party or anything, but my girlfriends and I did get together and we went dress shopping, which was an amazing time. And he didn't have a bachelor party or anything like that either. We didn't feel like we needed any of that. It was funny because I was doing these things with these women going dress shopping and I didn't even have a ring yet. But like, I knew that we were going to get engaged at some point. But I think it was like 6 months before the wedding, I still didn't have a ring on my finger, but I never questioned it. Like, I knew we were getting married. So that was never, and I say that because I think it's important to show the relationship that we had, that there was a lot of trust, that there was a lot of love, that there was this deep connection and respect. And that allowed me to move into sometimes the unknown or into things that I would not have normally done that particular way, meaning not control it so much. It allowed me to do that, to step into that with more faith. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and being part of this community. I want to hear from you. Did something resonate with you in this episode? Are you experiencing awakenings or synchronicities in your life? Do you have any questions or ideas for the podcast in general? Email me at podcast@abundancewithathena.com or DM me on Instagram at abundancewithathena. And share with me your stories. And with your permission, I'll share them with our community. And until next time, keep awakening to the abundance that's always within you.